Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. Tonight with your hosts, me, Alan, Aline and Hugh. On tonight's program, we chat by phone with our good friend Reggie Ho in Hong Kong. It's been some time since we last spoke with Reggie, so tonight's program will be dedicated to a number of Hong Kong-related topics and issues. And Reggie's journalist skills and experience will give us a unique insight into what's happening in that metropolis of some 7 million people. So we have another great show coming up on Orange Ribbon, so stay tuned for the next hour on Joy 94.9. And to our Chinese friends here in Melbourne and around the world, for Chinese New Year, Kung Hai Fat Choi, or for Mandarin speakers, Gung Chi Fa Chai. Welcome to Orange Ribbon program tonight with Aline and Hugh and I. Hello, Hugh.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Aline, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, you forgot.
She's just very quiet tonight.
It's been a while since we've spoken to Reggie Ho in Hong Kong. And so we thought instead of doing the usual one segment of talking to Reggie about what's happening in Hong Kong, that we'll spend the entire program talking about some things Hong Kong and the news that's happening up there. So we've got Reggie on the line. Hello, Reggie.
Hey, Alan.
It's been a while since we've had you on Orange Ribbon.
Has been.
Sorry about that.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon.
I'm very glad to be on here, but I will try to have like 1 hour worth of content to talk about.
Well, it's actually only 30, 35 minutes when you actually think about it. But anyway, let's see how we go. Now, the first thing we want to talk about was, and we certainly got the news down here, you had a Pride March, which ended up being reasonably successful a few weeks ago.
It was quite successful. It's very Hong Kong style, so it didn't really have the flamboyance and the flair that you would expect in, say, Mardi Gras or, you know, Pride marches in New York or somewhere else. There were no short shorts. I didn't see them, and I wasn't wearing them.
And no bare bum in chaps or something like that.
No. But, I mean, the spirit was high, and we were marching from, if you're familiar with the geography of Hong Kong, we started from Causeway Bay, mm-hmm. sort of right behind SoGo, and then we were walking all the way down to Wan Chai, and then to the Southern Playground, where they had a stage performance. And so basically, there were actually more controversies beforehand, because they were going to have buses. So the committee was trying to hire buses from Citibus, one of the major bus companies in Hong Kong, to have buses parading along Hennessy Road. And after long negotiation, the bus company finally came back and said that they would not lease the buses to the committee because of one of the reasons being company image.
Company image.
And we weren't quite so. The committee was, you know, trying to get a clarification from them as to what they meant by company's image, and they did not get back to them. At least they haven't. And it did stir up a bit of controversy because a lot of people were saying that, what would they mean by company's image? And of course, we haven't got the answer. And the fact that it did show discrimination, and you know that a lot of different occasions they would, you know, lease out buses to different events, and suddenly there's a Pride March, and they wouldn't.
Reggie, you've got a bit of antiphobia there from the bus company.
I think it's interesting that I find that in Hong Kong, and people have been, actually I've had a debate with a lot of friends about whether or not Hong Kong is a homophobic city. I myself find that, you know, on sort of everyday level, when you're interacting with people, I don't find a lot of people to be, blatantly homophobic. A lot of people are very ignorant about the topic. You know, there are still a lot of sort of, hearsays and things that they talk about, you know, homosexuality, you know, making a mockery of the subject. But people aren't, you know, the gay bashing in Hong Kong is almost unheard of.
Is it, at least, sorry, Reggie, is it unheard of because maybe it's not reported?
No, because, well, in Hong Kong, if something, if gay bashing happens, it will be reported.
Right.
Hong Kong has a very vibrant media culture. So, you know, I mean, they would report on the most, I mean, a drunk in Wan Chai, you know, beating up two guys, it would be reported in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. So if there's gay bashing, it will be reported. And, I mean, there was a report about two women, apparently lovers, were getting very intimate on the train, and they had a lunchbox thrown at them. So some guy didn't like it and just threw a lunchbox at them.
Anyway, getting back to your Pride March, though. So tell us more about the Pride March, because there'd been previous attempts, hadn't there? And you were involved in one of them.
Well, I was. I had a little one. I think it's 2005. And at the time I was approached by two friends and, you know, a restaurateur and someone who was in corporate entertainment. And they said that, I mean, there is this place on Lan Kwai Fong called Club 97. And it, you know, they had this regular Friday gay happy hour. And they're saying that, and it just so happened, there was also this Lan Kwai Fong Carnival, this district being the party district. And of course, a lot of the bars were owned by the same three companies. And they were trying to throw a carnival. And so we said, well, wouldn't it be appropriate to have like a little, you know, gay march on Lan Kwai Fong? We only did a little walk because of safety issues. But, you know, we had about 100 people turning up, and, you know, there were performers, and there were people, you know, dressing up. People were, you know, looking at, observing it. So we had like a small one, but I wouldn't really call it a march because it was really just like a
gathering,
a stroll.
I read, Reggie, that Dakes on Bakes had to leave their bakes at home. Why was that?
Leave your baits at home.
Bakes.
Bates.
Bike, bicycles. Oh,
sorry, I've got a Scottish accent.
Motorbikes.
I thought I had a bait or bait.
It took us a while to get used to the accent as well, Reggie, so you're not the only one.
there was a group, actually I've never met them, and I was actually quite thrilled to hear that they existed, and it's called Dykes on Bikes.
I'm surprised that there's a Dykes on Bikes in Hong Kong myself, I must admit.
And apparently they were very enthusiastic and they really wanted to join the march, but because the police department wouldn't, in order to organize a march or a large scale gathering, you have to get something from the police called the no contest, like they wouldn't disagree to it, because they were saying that they have to, you know, ensure safety and the traffic and all that, which made sense. But they wouldn't allow any vehicles in the march. And so, you know, if Dykes on Bikes are not on bikes, then they're not Dykes on Bikes.
Dykes on Bikes on foot.
Yeah.
That's it.
So they said that they'll forget it. If we're not allowed to have our bikes, we're not coming. So I don't think they turned up. Maybe individuals turned up, but not as a group.
How many people turned up in total?
I think we were guessing about at least like 1,000, more than 1,000 people.
That's significant for Hong Kong.
Significant for Hong Kong, considering that, you know, I was remembering that some 10, 15 years ago, at the time I wasn't with Horizons, but I know that the founder of Horizons, Barry Brendan, was trying to organize a little march on Lan Kwai Fong, much like the way I was trying to organize. And he was thinking that, you know, at least 20 people would turn up and it would at least be something. And nobody turned up. It was only him and his friend in outfits. Sorry, that's my dog. I think he's very excited about the subject. And of course, like then, you think about it, that's only, you know, less than 20 years ago. And that is quite significant how the 20, and then like, you know, three years ago, more than 100 people turned up to that Lan Kwai Fong little walk that we had. And then now you have more than 1,000 people. I think it is very significant. It shows that, I mean, on the world scale, it's still quite small. But for Hong Kong, this is seeing the changes that have happened in the last 5 years.
But it will grow. I mean, Melbourne has been having a Pride March, I think, for about 10 years or so, I think, now. The first one, I think, was about 10 or 11,000 people. And over the subsequent years, it grew up to 40, 50,000 people. So let's hope that, you know, something similar can happen in Hong Kong over the next 5 to 10 years.
And I'm sure it will, yeah.
Well, do you think it really has sown the seeds now? Do you think, because the problem, I think, was getting a lot of guys and girls from Hong Kong to actually come out and be on the street. Do you think this has sort of broken the ice?
I think it has, and I think that the one of the major changes is the fact that the young lesbians and gays, this generation, grew up with the internet, so they they get information quite easily. They're not as insecure as my generation. When I was growing up as a gay man, it was horrible. But now that they get to meet friends and they get to get information on the internet, they're much more secure and they're much more confident about themselves. And I think that the march, a lot of the people who turned up were, you know, in the 20s, and they are very, you know, confident about this issue. They're not afraid to tell people who they are. And of course, I mean, that's not to say that, you know, homophobia doesn't exist in schools, and it does. And the fact that, you know, there's still a lot of homophobic teachers. And I think that one of the very sad facts is a lot of people that I interact with, they aren't blatantly homophobic, but the blatant homophobia happens in schools.
Reggie, sorry to interrupt, but I actually read on the internet that a lot of non-gay people turned up for your Pride March. So, a lot of straight people. So, what do you think was the numbers there, straight against gay at the Pride March?
Well, it's hard to say, but I do know that a lot of women's rights groups were present. They are also very supportive in all the pursuits that gay groups have, because they see it as the same as respecting individual rights, you know, to a woman or to a gay person or lesbian person. You know, it's no difference. Everybody should be free to be what they are. And I think that there was a presence of a lot of women's rights groups. But it's hard to, of course, you can't look into a crowd and really see, you know, what the composition it is. But yes, I mean, it has been, you know, the women's groups and LGBT groups have, you know, we have developed quite a strong alliance. And we work on a lot of issues. They were at the march. And a lot of onlookers, a lot of people were actually thrilled to see it happening. I wouldn't know whether they really understood what was going on. Some people probably just thought there's a march.
Reggie, was there also a number of support groups such as friends and parents and family of gay and lesbian?
No, we don't have a PFLAG. Horizons tried to organize some.
We should point out to our listeners, because they know Horizons is a gay counseling phone service, isn't it, in Hong Kong?
Yes, it is. Mm. I have been with it for 10 years, and we were organizing support groups for parents and friends, and of course a lot of parents and also siblings. But and there is also a group called Over the Rainbow, which does a lot of work in liaising parents of lesbians and gays. But there hasn't been a strong PFLAG group, and I mean, which is something that I would like to see in Hong Kong in the near future.
Mm. This is Orange Room, and you're with Alan, Hugh and Aline, and we're speaking to Reggie Ho in Hong Kong.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon with Hugh, Aline and Alan, and our guest on the program tonight is Reggie Ho.
We just wanted to talk about the Obscene and Indecent Tribunal Ordinance Review.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just tell us about it and what it does and the things that they ban?
There is this ordinance that sort of gives power to this tribunal to go out and rule articles that are displayed in public, whether they are indecent or obscene. And of course, the guidelines are very ambiguous, so it all falls into the hands of the adjudicators. And a lot of the adjudicators, you can always sign up for the post, and they're not paid jobs. They just, you know, it's just sort of like a public service that you sign up for. And of course, a lot of really concerned people, especially from good groups such as Society for Truth and Light, which is supposedly a Christian concern group, and of course they have a lot of people there. They would go there, and so whenever you have to post, say, a posters for a movie, of course movies and TV programs fall into a different law, but if you post posters or you have an exhibition or you have anything that touch on sexual subjects, then they could have people just turning up and rating whatever you're displaying. And they could rule something. If it's indecent, then they would say that, oh, okay, this is indecent and it can only be shown to people who are over 18. If they rule something as obscene, then it just cannot be displayed at all.
And that carries severe punishment, does it?
It does.
You actually go through with it.
it carries fines and imprisonment. And of course, you know, once something is ruled as obscene, you have to take it down. And the subjects such as, and there's a very good example, there was a movie called Better Than Chocolate, which was a movie about a lesbian couple. And they had a poster, which was actually, to me, very artsy, just a painting of, you know, two women hugging. And they were naked. And so they took issues with that for some reason. You couldn't even really see, you could see the back of one of them, and then it's a painting, first of all. And then you can maybe see a bit of the breasts. And then they were really taking issues with it, and they ruled it as indecent. Actually, I think even obscene, they wouldn't allow it to be displayed. And it stirred up a lot of, but then they couldn't explain the guidelines. Well, how did they judge it as obscene? And so recently, I think that there have been a lot of controversies with, I'm sure you know about Gay Lover, this RTHK government television station program that talked about, interviewed gays and lesbians who wanted to get married. And then there were a lot of protests, and then tribunal, which the TELA, Television and Broadcasting Authority, decided that the program was too biased, and they warned RTHK to say that, you know, if you do a documentary style program, you have to be very neutral, and you couldn't just air one side. But people were arguing, but hey, what if you're exploring about, say, Christianity? Do I have to bring in all different religions in to talk about the topic? I mean, this just didn't make sense. They weren't advocating, the program wasn't advocating gay marriage. They were just simply interviewing people who had the wish to get married, and they felt that the law wasn't on their side. Mm-hmm. Now, this might not be directly related, but I think the government is sensing that there have been a lot of, you know, a lot of these laws really need to be reviewed because they're quite old. A lot of them are from the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
And so the obscene and indecent article tribunal, the ordinance, they were reviewing it. So we had a meeting at the Legislative Council. And, of course, a lot of Christian concern groups, again, were there. And then there were some parent groups were there. And there were, also, of course, LGBT groups. Because quite often it is the LGBT topics that have been ruled as indecent or obscene. And so we were sitting there, and I think that one thing that really concerns us is the government doesn't really seem to know what they're doing, which is not new to us, but the proposals that they had was ambiguous at best. They say they just reiterated that there was a need to have an ordinance like this so that children would not be damaged by the things that they see. But, you know, a lot of legislators were just basically questioning that what would be something so obscene that it would damage someone for life? I mean, can you tell us, you know, what exactly do you have in mind? I mean, the fear that we had was, you know, a law like this could quite easily be used as a tool to control what you can see, what you can read, what you can... Yeah. And it's something that we need to be very cautious about. And I think the fact that the ordinance that exists, that something could be ruled obscene and even an adult cannot have a viewing of it, that tells you that this law is archaic. And a lot of people have been saying that, you know, the government should really just scrap the law.
Reggie, how does the government deal with this ordinance review on the internet?
Yeah, and the internet was a big part of it, and so they were actually even considering erecting some sort of monitoring system from the government part, which was the very scary part too. And, you know, they were saying that, you know, there might be need to have even a government-wide control system to block off things that might be obscene. And we were just so a lot of groups are actually trying to experiment with you know, all these sort of control systems, and in fact, they don't work. I mean, they block out things that are legitimate, and sometimes things that, you know, they don't, you know, the engines can never really effectively judge. And in fact, there's no need for that. And I think that pretty much there was a consensus of saying that the internet is actually one of the greatest assets that we have. And I think that I actually even said that, you know, a lot of people have been saved by the internet because, especially, you know, people, as I said, a lot of young people grew up with the internet and they can get access to information and they can meet people. Yes, there are risks, and, you know, people, you might, you know, end up meeting someone who might be, you know, who might have bad intents, but that's the same with you meeting anyone else, anywhere else. You could meet someone bad in a library. You could be, so the fact that we're just feeling that that the government should really be cautious as to, and first of all, we insist that the internet should never be monitored. That's
thank you.
Thing.
Reggie, we just have to stop you just for a moment. This is On Driven and Joy 94.9 with Aline, Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
This is On Driven on Joy 94.9 with Aline, Alan and Hugh and our guest Reggie Ho in Hong Kong. Reggie, the next thing that we want to move on to is Domestic Violence Ordinance. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, Domestic Violence Ordinance is this law that aims to protect people who are facing abuse in relationships. And in the last legislative year, when it first began, it was mostly protecting blood relatives or people who are married. But in last legislative year, it was extended to cohabiting couples and even ex-spouses, because those people were also
Your dog is the dog is certainly interested in this.
She's an advocate. So it's been extended to people who are cohabitating, and we have now a debate that we would like to include same-sex couples.
That was my next question, Reggie. Mm-hmm. At the moment, obviously, same-sex couples aren't included.
They aren't. And of course, a lot of people are up in arms, especially the people who hold very strict religious views. And of course, there are a lot of this Society of Truth and Right is of course leading the whole movement. And they're saying that by including same-sex couples into the ordinance, they think that it's indirectly recognizing same-sex relationships,
right,
which is indeed not true, because same-sex relationships are a fact of life. And the fact that because these people are together in relationships, some of them might be prone to abuse or same as heterosexual couples and cohabiting couples.
I actually read that gay couples are not included because they consider that they spread AIDS and abuse children. Is that right?
they say all these things. I mean, it's the same everywhere in the world that you go to. For some reason, all these really right-wing fundamentalists, they always like to bring in child abuse. And of course, talking about child abuse, we all know a lot of this child abuse is happening in some of the religious bodies.
Mm.
And it is exactly these people that come out to drag in all these issues. They always like to... Society of Truth and Light is obsessed with bestiality. Every time we talk about gay rights, they always drag in bestiality. And we're just trying to explain to them, we're talking about gay rights of two consenting adults trying to be in a relationship, and where does bestiality come in? I'm very concerned about their mental well-being.
Where do you think they get this bestiality thing from? I mean, where does it come from?
I don't know. Every time. Even with the Domestic Violence Ordinance, we had a little forum and we had legislators talking on the issues, because it's quite divisive. A lot of the political parties are actually divided among themselves. And suddenly there's this woman just kind of saying that, well, if you want to protect same-sex couples, then a lot of people are very close to their pets as well. Why do you protect their pets?
Believe what I'm hearing.
When the debates get to a level like that, you can't,
How do you... Yes, I don't even know how you get into that debate, really.
And of course, the only thing you can do is to ignore them, because I'm quite sure that the general public is rational enough to know that this is irrelevant. But the fact is, I don't know where it comes from, but it happens every time. And 80-90% of the time, they always bring in bestiality or animals.
Anyway, on domestic violence then, sorry, getting back to that, is domestic violence a major issue in Hong Kong in general, putting aside gay and lesbian couples?
It is in general, and especially in bad economic times, and people are saying that people get stressed out because of job securities, and then you have families that, because of stress, and it prone them to conflicts. But we also actually did a little survey at, I think, among same-sex couples. Some 60% of the couples being interviewed, 60% have said that they had sort of experienced some sort of abuse. And, you know, regardless, I think that if you believe that, you know, we all know that sometimes in families, because of relationships, you know, you have to bit of the power struggles, and in some cases it might result in abuse. Regardless of the sexuality of the person, you have to know that you have to protect people who are abused and who need protection. And it's a humane issue. It's an issue about the safety of people who are in vulnerable situations. And I think that we do see a lot of reports about domestic violence in Hong Kong. Very rarely would same-sex couples domestic violence cases come to light, because we also talk about an issue of being out. A lot of these couples, they are quite closeted, so the abuse victims might be very reluctant to come out to talk about their experiences, and they face the abuse issues, and then they face the coming out issues. So to them, they are actually the most vulnerable when it comes to domestic violence.
Very, very quickly for this segment, but homosexuality was decriminalized in Hong Kong, I think, 91, was it? 91, 92,
91.
Now, you don't have recognition of same-sex couples there at the moment. Do you think that's on the horizon, or do you think that's still a long way away?
It's probably still a long way away, but but a lot of things are quite unpredictable now in Hong Kong. I think that LGBT groups are doing very good jobs in putting issues on the table. And I mean, DVO, the Domestic Violence Ordinance, having come so far that the government is agreeing to table an amendment and to get so many people talking about it, I think that's an achievement in itself.
Okay. This is Orange Ribbon. You're with Aline, Hugh and Alan. We're talking to Reggie Ho in Hong Kong.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
This is On Driven on Joy 94.9 with Alan, Aline and Hugh, and our guest tonight is Reggie Ho in Hong Kong. Reggie, you are a very good speaker, and no doubt you spoke a lot about gay rights in Hong Kong. Have you ever been in trouble with the police in Hong Kong because of your views?
No, I haven't. To be fair, Hong Kong isn't really a police state. I mean, we have to actually sometimes appreciate that Hong Kong is one of the safest cities in the world to live in. There were sporadic cases of what I heard were police making homophobic remarks when they were raiding gay clubs. But I haven't heard, cases like that for at least 8 years. And I think that in Hong Kong, the police force in itself, I don't think is blatantly homophobic, but certainly they are not out there to protect lesbian gay rights either.
Richard, why were they raiding gay clubs?
Well, we can only guess, because of course when they raid gay clubs, they don't say that they're raiding the clubs because they're gay clubs. They say that they're looking for drugs. But of course, nightlife, you go to any clubs, you could always find drugs. Now, I think that sometimes it's exert certain terror to just tell people that, you have to behave yourself. But of course, as I said again, I think that, the police force has been, it's only 20 years ago that they still had a special unit targeting suspected homosexuals. So you have to give it to them that, in general, the police might still have a very conservative culture when it comes to dealing with, sexual minorities. But, in recent years, I think that they haven't really done anything that led people to believe that they were targeting sexual minorities. Now, but when you're saying that, of course in Australia you have, lesbian and gay liaisons in the police force to actually, look at the subject of possible discrimination, that kind of things would probably not happen in Hong Kong, at least not in the near future. I think the government is now sort of having a very hands-off policy. They don't really want to stir up the lesbian gay debate, because every time they do that, you always have all these groups up in arms, saying how, you know, that lesbian gay people are destroying families. And I don't know where that comes from either, because that, because it's the same that, you know, whenever you're talking about even to give any sort of acknowledgement to the existence of same-sex relationships, you would always have people coming out saying that that would destroy the institution of marriage. Now, no one can see how two people choosing to be together would destroy other people's relationships. And but I think that the government or the police force, and they're always very cautious about these things now. They're being politically correct, but they're not being proactive either. Mm. Now, so I would like to see more proactiveness from the government to actually acknowledge that there is discrimination and it needs to be dealt with.
Now, you indicated in your notes to us that you believe there's a rising anti-gay movement in Hong Kong. Why, what, on what basis do you make that sort of assumption?
Well, you hear more about them. They have campaigns, and the campaigns are getting bigger and bigger and louder and louder.
Are they supported by any political parties?
They are. Well, the DVO issue was not by political parties, but I think part of the reason why the domestic violence ordinance issue came to such fierce debate was because one of the legislators vowed that he had support from Christian groups to vote against the amendment to include same-sex couples in the ordinance. So he brought the religious card to the table. And of course the Christian, there were a lot of, I'm not saying all Christian groups are anti-gay, but a lot of them do claim some sort of religious background. And a lot of these groups, you know, certain legislators in the chamber have religious faiths. But some of them are sensible enough. For example, even RGU, and who is from the Civic Party, I mean, I believe she is Christian. But she would be able to say that as a legislator, I'm looking at law that affects the whole of Hong Kong, which consists of people of different faiths. You know, the job as a legislator is not to only serve, you know, your people who are in your religion, but you're serving the whole of Hong Kong. So if they're sensible enough, they would think that. But you know, Wong Sing Chi, which is a legislator who brought the religious card in, he was just saying that, well, but I have a lot of people talking to me from Christian groups, and he himself being a Christian. And of course, the bishop, Bishop Zen, came into the debate and said, you know, he supported that Wong Sing Chi should vote according to his conscience, which quite obvious to us what that meant. Now, I think the fact that this whole ordinance, the debate becomes so public, it's actually a good sign. I think it's much better for people to just put things on the table and debate about it, regardless of how many nonsense they bring to the table. Mm. It is better than not talking about it.
Reggie, so, I read on the internet in Hong Kong, the number of new HIV cases recorded among men who have sex with men has increased every year since 2003, and up to one-third of the population could be HIV positive by 2020 if prevention programs are not effective. Do you think that could maybe have something to do with some of these groups, the anti-gay groups?
Well, certainly it can be used as an excuse to be anti-gay from their point of view, but I think that AIDS is an issue that affects everyone, and there might be, even if it's indeed, I mean, first of all, I'm always taking all these surveys and research with a grain of salt, because I think that it all depends on how they look at it. And I'm not saying that there isn't an issue with HIV and AIDS. There is. There has been for the past many 20 years. But the fact is, we need to look at it as prevention, but not stigmatization. You're not stigmatizing a group because they have an HIV, you know, rise in HIV cases. You don't just go ahead and label all of them to be HIV positive. You look at the issue of what's going on, what is causing the trend, and I think that this is what we're doing. I personally think that the HIV, groups such as AIDS Concern and the AIDS Foundation, they do a very good job in spreading the message of safer sex.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Reg, what's the government's action in regards to AIDS awareness program?
They're obligated to. I mean, they held. The health authority has a Red Ribbon Center that educates about the issues. And of course, AIDS Foundation is supported by the government as well. And of course, you know, they work closely with AIDS Concern. Everybody has a lot of respect for the work that they do at AIDS Concern and those groups. But at the same time, I think that the safer sex messages have been the same for the past many years. Without acknowledging the change in how people behave when it comes to meeting their sex partners, they used to do a lot of work in public toilets, but now a lot of people, they meet their sexual partners on the internet. And they do try to tackle that, but I think that the message is that a lot of people have been hearing the same message about, they know, a lot of people know what safer sex means. It means using condoms when you have anal intercourse and preferably oral sex. But at the same time, is they haven't really tackled the issues of some people. They choose not to practice safer sex because of what? I mean, some of them I personally think that this, the fact that, you know, discrimination hasn't been dealt with, a lot of the sexual minorities have very low self-esteem and their self-protection awareness is very low. I think that, you know, I think the discrimination, has a big part to play in it. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, as some Horizons runs a hotline, we often hear people saying that, you know, people like us, you know, they're saying something like people like us might, you know, we're not going to live long anyway. A lot of people are still holding very pessimistic views about themselves simply because they're gay. And when you have that kind of mentality, you know, you're not very acute when it comes to protecting yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that needs to be dealt with. And this is a message that I've been trying to you know, every time when we talk about how to, you know, the AIDS prevention, I always bring to less, continue to tell people to use condoms, practice safer sex. But at the same time, look at the discrimination that causes people not practicing safer sex.
Now, you've mentioned Horizons on a few occasions during our chat tonight. For those that may have missed out, I know we mentioned Horizons on some earlier programs when we've been chatting to you, but for our more recent listeners, tell us very briefly a little bit about the Horizons and what it does and your involvement in it.
Horizons, it started in 1992, soon after decriminalization of homosexual acts between men. And at the time, our founder had a vision of, because at the time there were already groups like Hong Kong 10% Group was doing very good political lobbying work, but there wasn't an organization to listen to people's problems. And so he felt that the best way to do it was through a hotline, because everybody could have access to a telephone. And since then, we haven't stopped our hotline service, and we occasionally organize support group services for people who like to sit down and talk about issues that they face with as sexual minorities or as relatives of sexual minorities. So I've been with it for 10 years, and also, you know, whatever chance we get, we try to organize public forums or try to organize educational programs. So we've been still going on. And
what are the hours that you operate?
It operates every Tuesday and Thursday from 7:30 to 10:30 in the evening, and we try to increase the number of nights whenever we can. But so far, two nights a week is what we can handle.
And do you get many calls?
We get an average about 3 to 5 calls a shift. Sometimes you get up to 7 calls a shift. We have 2 counselors for each shift, and 3 hours. You know, 7 calls could be quite plenty. And you know, quite often we do have more new callers now. There used to be a lot of repeat callers.
The same ones. Yeah.
People who called in. People when they're in a hole about an issue, they can't think beyond it, and you have to talk to them many times for them to look at things differently. But we do have now younger callers, people who are in their 20s, and there are also new callers who. And I think that, you know, it's part of the difficulty of running a group like this, because we're very short of resources, and promotion is quite important. We can get a lot of volunteers interested in attending shifts and taking calls, but to tell them to go out to promote hotline, they find it very difficult, because a lot of the volunteers we have now are quite young, and you tell them to just go out, go to the clubs and bars to promote the hotline, they're quite shy about it, and this is something that I've been trying to, and so you have to get them used to, you know, going out talking to people to promote your organization. That's one of the challenges I'm trying to to resolve.
Just one last question, Reggie. Do you have any gay publications in Hong Kong that you can use?
We have a magazine here called Dim Sum, which you can get from a lot of clubs and bars, and they do a very good job. They have a lot of good, they have good read, a lot of very provocative articles. And we used to have more, but it's one thing that puzzles me sometimes is I think that as a city of 7 million people, we should have more bars and clubs and places for sexual minorities and more publications, but we used to have more magazines for lesbian gays, but for some reason they can't sustain themselves. I don't know whether it's because they were not well managed or just because the market didn't support it. But so far, Dim Sum is the one that is ongoing.
Okay, we might wind it up there, Reggie, because we're running out of time. So thanks very much for taking the time out to have this chat to us. Thanks very much, Reggie.
Thanks, Reggie.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Reggie.
Bye. That's Orange Ribbon for another week. Our sincere thanks to Reggie Ho in Hong Kong for spending the past hour with us. Coming up next on Joy is Simon and Paul with Global Sounds. Thanks for joining us on Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 o'clock next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT community here in Australia and around the world. And thanks also to Nick here on reception for his help tonight also. From Aline, Hugh and myself, Alan, for now, bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.